Hello, you're listening to the Bonded Books podcast, where we discuss books, fight over book boyfriends, and the lack of filter is a family trait. If you're lucky, you might even hear one of our dogs barking in the background. Because hey, if we have to deal with them, then so do you. We hope to dazzle you with our discussion while not being hurtful to the authors we feature. Success not guaranteed. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Hi.
Anything happening in your life?
Not much. The kids are done with spring break, but my oldest has had the stomach flu for a few days, so that's been fun.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It's horrible.
Well, then the youngest one isn't feeling well, so she's missed 2 days of school. So.
Oh, those kids. Oh, my God. It's been a mess. I haven't felt so great for the past couple of days either. I wonder if there's something going around. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with me? I just thought it was me. Maybe there is a bug.
I don't know. I have been fine, and so has Jeff, but him and I have been kind of stuffy, sinusy issues, not stomach issues. So I'm not sure what's happening.
It's just a CF, any way you look at it.
Yes, and Mercury is in retrograde for almost the entirety of April, so that's been fun.
Oh.
Lots of issues already.
I didn't know that you even believed in that stuff.
It's hard to not believe in it when the electronics immediately start fucking up on April 1st when the first day. So it's supposed to be from the 1st through the 25th. April Fool's is not joking because it was immediate problems everywhere starting on Monday.
So what exactly is supposed to be happening when Mercury is in retrograde?
What's supposed to be happening?
Yeah, what does that even mean?
I'm not sure what actually happens with Mercury, if anything fucking happens, but it says that there's energy shifts, communication breakdown, and encounters with long-lost connections. That's like what happens personally.
I don't want any connection with long lost connections. Stay disconnected from me, please. And you know who you are.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah.
It is an optical illusion that occurs when the planet Mercury appears to move backwards in the night sky. In reality, the Earth briefly overtakes Mercury in its orbit, creating a visual effect.
That's wild.
I just assume something actually happened with Mercury and they don't just use it as a way to say like, oh, this is why all this shit's going down.
Yes. Talking about shit going down, I have to say real quick, I went to my group yesterday with all the lovely ladies that where we work on stuff to donate for charity. And there's one lady there. Her name is Peggy. And I really like her. I really like a lot of the people there, but Peggy is just awesome. She used to make bronze statues. She's very interesting. We talk a lot about art. I was talking to her yesterday and I mentioned something about the podcast. She goes, what are you talking about? I go, you know, the podcast I do with my daughter. She goes, I didn't hear about that. So I told her about it. I said, do you want a card? She said, yeah. And she looked at the card. She goes, I'm going to start listening to you guys. So Peggy's like 86 years old. Peggy, I don't know that you want to listen to us. We're pretty nasty at times when we're talking about these books. She goes, that just sounds like it's so much fun. So shout out to my friend Peggy. If she's listening, you know, I appreciate your support and I look forward to seeing you next week.
Hi, Peggy. Yes. Very exciting.
It is exciting. You never know who's going to be interested in these things and who isn't.
It's so funny because I'm like the opposite. So if people ask me at work about my tattoo, if they're a friend of mine, I'll mention that it's, you know, because of the podcast. If they're like just coworkers and I don't want them to know anything about what we do, because God, I'm going to be fucking mortified if some of my coworkers listen to this.
Sure.
I'm just like, oh yeah, I just like reading. And it helps that like in my tattoo, I have the the books, and then above it, I have the microphone. So if I have my sleeves rolled up a little bit, it usually covers the microphone aspect of it. So people just see the book. So I can kind of play it off as like, oh, I just really like to read.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I showed Peggy my tattoo, our symbol, and she was like, oh, that's so cool. I really like it. You must have lots of fun with your daughter. And I said, yeah, actually, I do.
Yeah, it's different.
It's definitely different. So anyway, getting back to this book, do you want to start introducing the book?
Yes. Okay. The book is Hexes and Vexes by Laura Greenwood and Arizona Tate, book one in the Amethyst's Wand Shop Mysteries series. This is book one, and it said that this book came out in 2020, and there's already almost 15 books in the series, so they are churning these things out super fucking fast.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild, because I read that too, of when it came out, and I was like, wow, there's so many books in this series.
The series is described as an urban fantasy mystery with an underlying slow burn romance.
Yeah, so this isn't our normal get down and dirty and do all the things to me kind of book. Is this considered a young adult book? I'm always asking that because I still don't get it.
No, it's not. But there's just absolutely no romance that happens in this book. I don't know if eventually when the characters do hook up, I don't know how they hook up. But this book has no spice, nothing.
Yeah. So I guess in the description, if they're saying slow burn, they mean really slow.
Yeah. I mean, if there's almost 15 books in the series, what's slow burn to them? Could it be book 10 when they finally hook up? Or get together? I don't know. I'm interested to find out what their definition of slow burn is.
You know what I'm also interested in? And I don't know why it matters to me. I just find it a little fascinating. I would like to know the ages of the authors that are writing the books. Mm-hmm. Because for me, I'm only talking about me. I feel like there's a big difference between when a younger person is writing a book and when an older person, like, say, Ruby Dixon, is writing a book. I think it's different type of writing and type of romance, but that's just me. And I don't know how old they are, but I'm assuming they're young.
I have no idea. And I also have no idea how they split up the division of writing in this book. What I've noticed in other co-writes is that it'll be a dual POV and say one author would have the female's point of view and the other author would do the male's point of view. So each chapter is kind of written from a different author. This whole story is written from the female's point of view. So I don't know how they divvied it up for a co-write.
Well, the thing that was good about that is that sometimes it's obvious when someone else, their writing style is so different, but the book just kind of flowed and you didn't know, oh, this must be one person writing and this must be the other.
True. So I have a bit of a confession to make for this book.
Oh, no. What?
It's just an error I made on my end.
Oh, no. This is, you guys, write this date on your calendar. What is it? What'd you do?
So this book was available on Hoopla. So that's how I read it, was through the Hoopla app, which is the library app.
Okay.
Which was fine. But for some reason, this book, a lot of times when you read through the Hoopla app, it will still connect to your Kindle and like send the book to your Kindle. So you could read the book on your Kindle, even though you've received the book from the library, if that makes sense.
That's interesting.
This book didn't do that. So I had to read it on my phone through the app the whole time, which I thought was okay. And it still let me do highlights in the book. So I was like, okay, this is essentially functioning the same way I would read it through the Kindle. But then I realized there's no option to actually export the notes that I've highlighted from the book.
Oh, no. That's what I was thinking. How do you export when you're in Hulu? Yeah, you can.
Well, yeah, it's weird because it like lets you bookmark things. It lets you highlight things. I can look at my highlights and jump to them throughout the book. but there's literally no way to export them. So I'm like, what the fuck? So of course, I realized that at the end of the book, when I went to export them, that exporting's not an option. Why would I highlight if I can't keep my notes? I have no idea.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So doing my notes for this episode was a little hard since I couldn't export anything. So I only have 3 pages of notes and they're very brief.
Oh, dear God.
I think that's also a combination of the way this book was written and what happens in the story, in addition to me not being able to export the notes.
Well, you could be like me, and every time you try to export your notes, they come out all jumbled. But I... Yeah, so it's a lose-lose situation. So what I ended up doing is I got through chapter 9 and exported at that point, and then I didn't export again, and I'll just do it off my Kindle, what I highlighted. But it worked, so at least they're in order. So we are so prepared and professional for this. No wonder we have listeners. I mean, who wouldn't want to see us fall on our face every time we try to do something?
And I keep having to mute myself because I keep feeling like I'm gonna fucking sneeze. So like, oh my God.
We're on a roll, people. We're on a roll.
Try not to be so jealous of us and our lives, okay?
Yeah, please control yourselves. All right, so let's do what we can do.
Do you want me to start?
Well, I can start. So the book starts with someone named Amethyst. And like Rachel said, the book is all through her point of view. She is a wand maker and a witch. And she has a shop in where she sells her wands. And she makes really high quality, nice wands. She's in her shop. Some man's in there arguing with her that he wants her money, his money back, because this wand he bought isn't doing what it's supposed to do. She is pretty fed up with this guy, and he threatens to report her to the Center of Wand Control. She ends up finally, after having this argument with him, giving him his money back and telling him to get out. And in walks another man. He is a mage. And so she could tell right away. She's wondering, what is he doing in my shop? They don't use wands. She tells him I'm closed. And he really wants to speak to her. She's finally like, fine, what can I help you with? He asks her if she is Amethyst of the Gemstone Coven. I guess all the covens have different names, and her coven is composed of gemstones.
Yes, I think her sister's name is Topaz, and
yeah,
her grandmother, I can't remember her name, but I'm sure it's a gemstone also.
Yeah, so he introduces himself as Detective Ambrose of the Paranormal Police Department. He tells her, I need your help, and she thinks, with what? Finding a wand? A mage doesn't use a wand, they use a staff. So there's this implied double entendre every time she mentions his staff. And he tells her that, I find my staff is more effective. And she can tell he's very serious and does not appreciate her comments.
I was chuckling a few times in this first chapter because right away, when she's having the issue with that first guy, she thinks, ah, retail, the joy and bane of my existence.
It's so true.
That was funny. And then she says, or she thinks, I'm as normal as they come. Ask anyone so long as they're mute. She's pretty funny.
She is pretty funny.
And yes, she makes a lot of, you know, references to his staff, of course. And then the chapter ends with her. She has this statue of a cat.
Yeah.
So she looks at the statue and she goes, what do you think, Herb? Because the statue's name is Herbert. And so he's like, are you talking to a statue? And she goes, he helps me think. And then Ambrose responds, it's a stone cat. And then she responds, wow, that's rude of you. Don't listen to the mean man, she says to the statue.
I never figure out in this book, is this freaking, because this cat is referenced on more than one occasion. I never figure out, is this cat, is she really talking to the cat or is it all an act?
Well, I feel like if the cat statue is not actually some sort of cat gargoyle shifter thing, then it's a missed opportunity, because she even thinks about how the statue gives her looks, or you know, how she talks to it. But then she also says he's never left the shop. So has he never left the shop because he is actually a statue? I don't know. To be determined, I suppose.
Yeah, so we find out in this chapter also that she's wanted to work for the police department as a detective, but she has been rejected when she has tried to apply. And so this guy is kind of, she likes to mess with people. The cat statue is a perfect example. He wants her to sign a bunch of documents and help him with a case. And she tells him, I'll do it on one condition. And he tells her, you're not in any position to ask for conditions. And she said, yeah, I think I am. And one of her conditions is that I'll help you after you apologize to Herbert. And he's like, you want me to apologize to his statue? So she's messing with him because he's so buttoned down that she wants him to loosen up a little bit. Don't you think that's why?
Yes, but it was also really funny because he ends up saying, fine, what do you want me to say? And then she thinks, a man who isn't afraid to play along with my brand of crazy, and he's attractive. If it wasn't for his seeming lack of personality, I'd have to lock him down and start a family.
Oh my God, I highlighted that too.
She's pretty funny. So he does apologize to that statue.
Yes. Sincerely, because she tells him, you're not being sincere, and he'll know that. So you have to be sincere.
Yes. So this is part of the reason that it's a little confusing if it's a statue or not. So he does apologize. And then she thinks the cat omits a satisfied vibe, and a smile curls around my lips. So how would the cat give off a vibe if there's not actually something in there?
Well, the cat must be, what is it, her familiar? What do they call a witch's cat?
Yeah.
Medium.
But I wonder, but why is it a statue? That's the thing that throws me off.
I think it's part gargoyle, like you said. But well, I don't know. We don't find out in this book.
Yes, maybe that's also a slow burn.
Yeah. Knowledge of what's happening with the cat.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants her to, she's ready to go with him and lock up the shop. And he's like, we don't have to go anywhere. I found a dead body, or I found a body. And she's like, a body? And he just wants her to look at a piece of the wand and see if she can tell who the owner is. And she thinks boring. She really wanted to go on this case with him.
She quickly finds out that a lot of murder investigation is quite boring, and there's a lot of downtime, and she's not interested in that. She wants the pizzazz and the fun part, the thrill.
Right, don't we all? Yes. And, you know, again, there's some comment. She sniffs the splinter for some reason and says penis or penis. I'm not sure how to say it. And his eyes get really wild. He's like, did you just call me a penis? And she's like, no, it's a piece of wood that comes from a pine tree.
They do a lot of this.
Yeah, a lot of banter, which is cute between them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and he also has her sign an NDA before he really lets her delve into things, right? He doesn't want her to go around talking about it, but he does want her to help him as a consultant for the PPD.
Yeah.
So she does, like you said, recognize the type of wood. She has a wand maker, right? This is her wand shop. So this is kind of what she does. So she recognizes the type of wood. I think she knows the grade level, all this stuff about it. And then there's like initials on it or part of initials on it. And she recognizes those as well.
Yes. And it's of a guy named Elmer that is a rival wand maker.
Mm-hmm. So Ambrose and Amethyst, she prefers to go by Amy. So she's referred to both names throughout the book. So Ambrose and Amy go to this guy Elmer's shop, which is called Elmer's Wand Wonders, to question that guy. And they don't really get anywhere with him. And then they leave from there.
Yeah, so the only thing we get out of that, I think, is that he is kind of ripping people off. He upgrades his wands, even though they're not the quality that they should be to deserve that grade. And he also is using, she puts some kind of gemstone on the end of her wand, and so does he, apparently. But his are glass, they're not real. So he's kind of a sleazy guy.
Mm-hmm. So they go from that guy's wand shop to the police station. He shows her some photos of the crime scene, and she ends up recognizing the man in the photos, somebody she calls Grandpa Dobromir, but he's not actually her grandfather. People just call him that because he's kind of a nice old man who's a hermit, friendly, but not really around. But that's just kind of the way people refer to him.
Well, I guess everybody in all the covens know him because they give him little gifts.
Yes, he's well known, even though he... What?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember why they do that. Why him? Do you remember?
I don't know. I think it's just because he is really old. It's just a way of respecting him.
Mm-hmm.
So she mentions that if you can find the wand that was used in this crime, then you could examine it and see which spells were recently used. So now they're trying to find the wand that sliver of wood came from. And
yeah,
mm-hmm. Ambrose says that they're trying to get the lab to certify the sliver of wood, and if they can do that, I guess to prove that it came from a wand in the first place, once they get that part done, then they can take that certification, give it to the CWC, which I think stands for the Center for Witch Control or something like that.
Center of Wand Control.
Wand Control, okay. And if they can give that thing to the CWC, then the CWC will in turn give them a list of the names of people who have purchased a wand that fits that description. That's kind of where they're going from here. It's all actually kind of similar to how things function in real life, I feel like.
Yeah, apparently making a wand or having a wand is heavily regulated, and you're only allowed to have one wand, and every wand leaves a trace of some kind of signature behind of the magic of the user that owns the wand. And if they can figure that out, they'll know who the murderer was.
Assuming that the murderer used their own wand in the crime. So... after that, Amy goes to her house, and I thought it was funny that she's talking to her grandmother for about 5 minutes when she confesses everything she's working on and who the victim is.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, oh my God.
Yeah, she signed that NDA, but this guy is really famous in the witch community and actually friends of her and her grandmother. Yeah, so the grandmother, before she tells her, she's like, what kind of equipment do you need? And she's like, I need to certify a wand, because her grandmother's been very helpful to her. They live together. And all of a sudden, she just blurts out who the victim was, because the grandma was not being very forthcoming and helping in this particular instance. And as soon as she blurts out who it is, her grandmother, you know, she says she bursts into action and bolts from the room, saying, I'll drive.
Yeah. So the three of them now are going to get that piece of wood, take it to the lab. And it turns out that Amy's grandmother has some pretty strong connections with a lot of people, because she's able to get Amy immediate access to the lab so that Amy can actually be the one to run the tests in the lab, right, using the lab's equipment, write up her findings, and then have the lab people take her findings and pass them on to the CWC.
Yes, there's a machine that's called the magic trace detector that she's going to use. And she's like shocked that her grandmother knows the director of this organization that's called the Winged Lion Laboratory. And Ambrose says to her, what are we doing here? We have to get in the queue. You can't just go in there. What are we doing here? And the grandmother says, well, we're getting you your silver certificate, because there has to be some kind of certification of the wand in order for him to get some kind of a warrant so that they can go to the house of the person that they're thinking did this and find out who killed this guy. I thought it was interesting that as soon as they get in there, grandma disappears, because at first the security doesn't want to let her in. And he's going on and on about why he's not going to let him in. And then the grandmother just takes out her phone and calls a number. And 2 seconds later, the security desk phone rings. And it's the director telling the guy, let them in. You know, don't question what they're doing, blah, blah, blah. So it's pretty funny.
I think there's a lot going on with the grandmother that we don't really find out. And maybe we find out in future books, because she also knows or knew of Detective Ambrose's great-grandfather, because she asks him, are you related to Chief something something Ambrose?
Right.
And he says, oh, that was my great-grandfather. That's when Amethyst realizes Ambrose is actually his last name, not his first name.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
All right.
So she does run the test. She gets all the certification, leaves that with the lab people. And then the three of them go their separate ways. And while they're apart, Amy is, I think, out to lunch. And while she's there, the doctor that she met at the lab also shows up. So they end up sitting together and talking a little bit. And the doctor tells her, essentially, if you're not consulting too much with the PPD, maybe you could come work for us or do training or give training here at the lab, and gives her a card, which I thought was interesting. Maybe she's going to do more of that in the future.
Yeah, so that was pretty interesting. I mean, her first love would be to consult all the time with the police department. But I think it's pretty interesting that they offered her a job, because she was a little concerned about being able to perform this test. She was a little nervous, but apparently she did it with flying colors, so much so that she impressed it's Dr. Riffin is this other woman's name.
I think she's certified in how to do the process, kind of like going to school, right? Like, she's learned how to do the process, but this was her first time actually doing it in the real world. And I think the doctor was impressed, because when she gave her the paperwork, she had used something. I can't remember what it was called, but I remember it was referenced as being similar to pixie dust.
Yeah.
In the process. And the doctor seemed impressed with how little she used in the testing.
Right.
Yeah, and we find out through her conversation with this doctor that she started training at 14. And though some people do, not everybody starts that young. So she's been doing this for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Even though she started young. Right. So that's why she has all these certifications and everything. So
yeah, and I think that Ambrose left her behind because he had to go to the station and she was not supposed to come along. So that's why she's antsy waiting at getting lunch and being antsy to hear from him.
Yes, and this is what happens in the real world when you're a police detective, right? You don't have your murder investigation take over all of your other cases. You still have a full caseload. So he's like, I have other cases I need to work on. This is kind of on pause until we hear from the CWC. So I'll let you know once we hear from them. But in the meantime, like, I have to pivot and do my other work. But Amy's like, this is an exciting thing to ever happen to me. I want to focus on just this.
Right.
So, but it is not long before he does contact her again, because he did receive that list from the CWC, and he asks her to go over it with him. And she starts kind of scratching stuff out on the list, like, right away. And he's like, hey, like, slow down a little bit. Yeah. We're like, you're scratching out a lot of shit on the list. Why are you doing that? And she's like, well, you know, I'm a certified wand maker, got the certification from the CWC. I know what I'm looking for. That's why I'm here. You don't know what you're looking for. And he kind of says, like, well, you're kind of young, right? And she's like, well, I made my first wand when I was 12. I started training at 14, and I went through 7 years of training and experience to get my certification. So yes, I'm young, but at the same time, I'm experienced and I know what I'm doing. Hence you freaking asking me in the first place, let me do what I'm here for.
Right. She's constantly trying to prove herself useful because she wants to continue this collaboration that they're doing on other cases.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that she's a wand maker. She owns or works at this wand shop, but it's kind of her second choice of what she wanted to do with her life. She wanted to work for the PPD. She had big aspirations, essentially, but since they didn't accept her when she applied, now her fallback is running the shop. And so this is really her chance to prove herself really, really useful. Right. Maybe she could, you know, pivot. Maybe she could turn this one opportunity into a lot more, which obviously she does, since this is essentially a 15-book series.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I guess the wand shop is a family business. That's why she's doing it. So when she couldn't get into the police department, she just started working for the family business. And I guess she runs it now.
Yeah, maybe it was her grandmother's, but now she runs it. But it's also a little misleading because the wand shop is called Amethyst Wand Shop, right? I think is the name of the store.
Yeah, I thought maybe she just changed it when she took it over. I don't know.
Maybe.
But Ambrose ends up calling her to the police department when he gets the warrant, and there's some weird little interaction when she walks in. There's a woman that's kind of, I don't know, flirting or interacting with Ambrose. She's kind of surprised that she feels a little jealous of that. And, you know, of course, Ambrose freaks out when they're caught. He looks embarrassed. And the woman ends up just ruffling his hair and then kisses him on the cheek and walks away. And I liked it because she's like, I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to shut up. It's none of my business. That's not why I'm here. And all of a sudden, she just blurts out, who's that? Because she can't help herself. Mm-hmm. And he tells her it's somebody named Sasha. I hate that name for personal reasons. I knew somebody with that name, and she was a fucking bitch, and I hope she burns in hell for all of eternity.
Wow.
So anyway, Yeah. Fucking hate her. Can't think enough bad thoughts about her.
Oh my gosh.
But she's somebody who works as a, don't piss me off in my life, okay? She's someone who works as a receptionist in the building across the way. So Amy's like, oh, she seems nice. And she's like, why did I just say that? I have no idea if she's nice. I was barely in the room with her for 20 seconds. And he, for some reason, yeah, he, for some reason, ends up telling her, you know, we used to go be together, but we were broken up now, just so you know. And she's acting like she could care less. But underneath, she does care.
Well, I think, you know, if they are the slow burn romance, he's probably embarrassed that this ex of his or this fling of his won't leave him alone. And so he wants to really clarify that nothing's happening there because he's interested in her, even though there's really nothing that happens in this book other than him telling Aunt Amy, hey, there's nothing going on there. There's really no evidence that he's really interested in her romantically. That's probably book 7 out of the 12 book slow burn when he finally confesses he likes her, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I won't even venture a guess.
Yeah. So anyways, they take this list of that they've received, that they've narrowed down. They question some people that are on the list, and they don't really get anywhere with that either. So now they're trying to pivot yet again and think, well, maybe they could find a witness or something to be the next lead. So a lot of the stuff that happens in this book is very true to life, where you get a couple steps, it leads nowhere. Then you go back to the starting point and you try a different avenue. It's kind of like going through a maze that you're trying to figure out which path will lead you to the center of the labyrinth.
Right, because they ended up pulling like 7 names from that list that they got, and they check them all out, and there's no one that would is the murderer. So it's like, okay, they're back to square one now.
Yes. Then, so my notes from here, I don't know if I wrote stuff in the correct order of what happens next, but I tried my best to summarize what happens from this point forward from my memory then. And from skimming the book.
Oh, here we go.
But they are trying to figure out kind of what happened at the crime scene. And I guess there's a spell that Amy can perform at the crime scene to return the items to the original location they were in, because while some of this stuff in the house doesn't look like it was messed up or it doesn't really look like it was a robbery, she's like, well, I can do the spell and it will make the items go back to the location they were originally in. And that might help us figure out if something was actually stolen or if something's missing. So they do that at some point. They also do some more investigating. They question some more people. She thinks at one point, or she says to Ambrose, why is solving murders so boring sometimes? And yeah, he responds, well, every job has its downsides. That was kind of funny.
Yeah, it does. It's just part of it.
And then the ending was kind of wrapped up very quickly and kind of anticlimactic. But I still think that's also very accurate in how sometimes these investigations go in real life, because they end up finding out who the killer is. They figure out what his motive was. They figure out that it was a robbery and that the robbery kind of went sideways. And because it went sideways, to cover up the robbery or to finish the robbery, find the item the guy was looking for, the murderer, he did murder that guy. So that guy was essentially collateral damage. If he wasn't home when the robbery occurred, he'd probably still be alive. And so that's actually, like, unfortunately, pretty common, I feel like. That's, shit just happens like that. It's something very simple, but it, you know, maybe has devastating results.
I was really surprised at how this got wrapped up. I expected it to be, I don't know what, but not what it was. But you're right. It was, this guy was just collateral damage. Somebody broke into the house looking for something specifically that they wanted. The guy happened to be home. So he ended up trying to do some kind of spell on this guy to find what he was looking for. And the guy died in the process. Mm-hmm. So the guy found what he wanted. And then he ended up staging the scene so it looked like a robbery and everything. He messed things up in the room to make it look like a robbery. And that's why when she did the spell, which I thought was kind of cool, to put everything back to its original state, they could find what was missing and what was taken, thereby knowing who committed the crime. Because like we said before, each coven gave gifts to this man. So the missing gift was from something the murderer had given or his coven had given.
Mm-hmm. I also thought it was interesting that this crime gets wrapped up in this book, and I would assume does not carry over into future books in the series. Now, I'm a little hesitant to say that because of what the epilogue was, but that's my thoughts, is that each book is a completely separate crime, which would be surprising, actually. I would feel like there would be a bigger situation overall.
I actually was glad it got wrapped up. It's like, I don't want to read about the same freaking crime for 15 books. I thought it would be better that they have different crimes that they're looking into.
Yeah, I'm only hesitant to say that this crime is a standalone because the epilogue was weird in that it was from the point of view of a criminal who describes himself as a serial killer.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
So I'm only thinking, really, really speculating here, because the victim in this book died, maybe the serial killer was involved somehow.
I don't think so,
but maybe that epilogue is just set up for the next book in the series. I have no idea. So
that's what I think. And while they're catching the killer of Grandpa, it's the only time that she sees Ambrose pull his staff out and use it. And she's super impressed with the level of magic that he has. I thought that was kind of funny.
I thought it was impressive, too, the way he uses that staff.
Yes, but you and I, our minds are always in the gutter. So anyway, to me, that's the end of the book, correct?
Yes, it was. That's how the book ends. So do you want to give your rating and your thoughts?
I want to hear yours first.
Oh, God, you always make me go first.
Okay, fine, I'll go first. So, as we all know, and I will admit it, I like my books a little more smutty. And the book was okay, but I think it was for like a younger person again. And I guess because there really was no romance or love interest, I'm not really into the slow burn trope. I thought the book was okay. I'd like the interaction between Amy and Ambrose. Again, both characters' names starts with an A. I wish people would get beyond that. And I liked their interaction. I liked Grandma a lot because, you know, you never know what us old people have hidden away or what cards we have up our sleeve. So because there wasn't any romance, again, this is yet another book where it's hard to rate because we read it by panties. I maybe would give this two panties. They're not wet, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would rate it. And because I have so many other books that have smut in it that I want to read, I probably won't read the next book. But it's no reflection on them. I'm sure for some people, it's a great read. And it's I was really hopeful because there were 15 books, because I'm looking for a new author that has a long series. I was hoping this was going to be it, but it's just not sexy or dirty enough for me. What about you?
That's fair. I think I would give it 3 dry panties. I would say it was an okay read. It was super fast and easy to read. It was a little less than 200 pages. I did like the banter. I thought Amy was really funny. Mm-hmm. But like you said, there's no romance at all. When they say slow burn, they mean slow burn. A lot of times to me, slow burn is maybe we get 2/3 into the book and they finally hook up, or they kiss or something, but
hold hands or something, for the love of God.
Yeah, this is like slow burn over the course of what I'm assuming will be several books. So combining that with the fact that I, even though it's a short book, I thought it was a little slow at times because, like I said, they do something, it doesn't really go anywhere. They do something else, it doesn't really go anywhere. So while it's accurate and true to life, it was kind of, I don't want to call it boring to read about, but I was also feeling Amy's frustration at times with, I wanted more shit to happen at points.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I did enjoy it. And if you're into paranormal suspense, this would probably be like the perfect series for you. But I'm more of a paranormal romance first person. So for me, I don't think I'll read any more books in this series, but I did still enjoy the book. I just wish it had a little bit more in the romance aspect.
I agree. Yeah. So is there anything else you've been reading? You have been reading that series still, right?
I have been on a essentially young adult fantasy romance kick from that author I mentioned last week, Sherry L. Tapscott. I do really like her writing. Like I said before, her writing is young adult. So she's very like, I wouldn't even say fade to black. There's not really much on the page except for kissing and closed door. You know, they'll allude to things happening. Now, she's like that when she writes by herself. I feel like when she does her co-writes with her husband, Jake Andrews, the books are much more adult in nature. So just keep in mind, if you check her out and you want a little more spice, maybe read her co-writes, which I also really enjoy. So I read the first two books, the only two books in the series that are out so far, from the series she has, if I could get this to open. The series is, what the heck? I'm not trying to edit something, stupid Goodreads. I'm just trying to read the series is Gray Brow Brothers. So I read the book Corsair's Curse and then the book Isle of Sorrows. I'm currently waiting for the third book in that series to come out. And I'm hoping that comes out soon because I really like that series. And then I actually blew through 4 books that she wrote in a different series.
Wow. What series is that?
That series is The Riven Kingdoms. Now, I follow her on Instagram, and she had posted on Instagram, I'm going to take this series off of Kindle Unlimited. And if you want to read it using KU, you have like a week at most to read the series.
Gosh.
So I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to read all 4 books in a week. Well, I did. I read them all in only a handful of days. They were so good.
Wow. Wow.
So hold on. The stupid cat's crying. Hold on.
I heard it.
Come on. Yeah, Chonker. Come on. So chonky.
So those books are, I'm probably going to say these out of order. So book one is Forest of Firelight. Book two was Sea of Starlight. Book three was Dawn of Darkness. And book four was Age of Auroras. So it's very young adult, but they're really well done. I don't mind reading young adult if I know right away it's going to be a young adult series, because then I don't have the expectation for the smutty aspect. But she does the romance really well. So,
well, see, that I would read. I would read that. It doesn't have to be smutty all the time. It just has, like I said before, it's got to be a good story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are good stories, good romance, multiple couples, multiple points of view written throughout the series. And so it's kind of nice to see all those kind of happen. So anyways, I finished all of those books. And so now I'm reading a different series from her. I just started it. It's called, book one is called Moss, Forest, Orchid.
Huh.
And I think I think that's maybe three or four books in that series. So I'm going to try to finish that series before I read Rebecca Hefner's book two that came out in the Syndaxa Chronicles.
Nice.
That book two, I had pre-ordered it and I forgot. So it was kind of a nice surprise when I opened my Kindle and I saw it had downloaded. Book two is Scorched Redemption. And that's the one that follows Ariana and Dominic, who were characters we know really well from book one, which we obviously did an episode on recently.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, good. I'm going to have to get that.
Yeah, I have that in the pipeline to read as soon as I get off of my Tapscott train that I'm stuck on.
Yeah, I, of course, went back and was digging through books by T.S. Joyce that I could read. And I actually found a series. She wrote it in, I think it was 2014. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I actually got to say I liked her later books better. If the series is called Bear Valley Shifters, that's the name of the series. Book one was The Witness and the Bear. And I read that. I liked it. It's more than, you know, it's not, she's definitely not a young adult writer, which I like about her. So sometimes, depending on the mood I'm in, I flip through the pages if there's a lot of graphic sex going on, because I've heard it before. But I like the story and the romance between her characters all the time. And so I read that. And then I also read Devoted to the Bear, which is book two in that series. And I finished that a couple of nights ago. That was also, it was kind of a continuation of the characters in book one that I thought was pretty cool. So I always have to have a T.S. Joyce book on the back burner, which I go back and forth between books we read for the podcast and books I just want to read. And her books are always books I just want to read. It's kind of like the Ruby Dixon train of books. I will always read another book that comes out by that author, because I've read all of Ruby Dixon's books.
Yes, you have, which is very impressive. She's got a shit ton of books.
I think she has like 23 of the in that series. But anyway, I really like her. So I honestly don't even know what our next book is. Do you?
Okay, so I can cut this if I need to, but our next book on the list is actually a book that's by the same author, Laura Greenwood, and it's called Pumpkin Spice. And my only hesitation with that, I looked it up before we started recording, and that is book one in a 13-book series. And let me try to scroll down here on the description. It says it's book one of the Cauldron Coffee Shop series, a cozy urban fantasy featuring a coffee shop owning witch, an ancient warlock cursed to live in a teapot, and a cheeky cat. It includes a male-female romantic subplot. It says, if you love all of these things, essentially, you will start with here. Start at this book. The book is called, sorry, I said it wrong, Pumpkin Spice and All Things Nice is the full title. So I don't know. I'm a little hesitant because if this is another slow burn, seeing as how it's book one of 13, we could have the same problem we had with this week's book. So we could still do it and try, or we could skip it and go to the next book on our list, which is Full Moon Saloon, book one of a trilogy.
How did you find these books?
You found all these books.
Oh, these were those free books.
Yeah, it says Full Moon Saloon is the first book in a romantic shifter series by the USA Today best-selling author of Wolf's Bane, Amy Easterling.
Let's do that.
Okay, Full Moon Saloon.
Yeah, I'm ready for a shifter book.
Okay. Yeah, so I guess that'll be our next book. And that will come out on April 24th.
Great.
So, all right. Well, anything else going on with you or anything else that you want to mention?
I got my garage door fixed, which was always exciting.
Oh, so what was it?
I cannot believe it sometimes. So I called up. I found this really great company. I gave them a great review. They came out that day. The guy looks at the door because I cleaned the sensors, like you had said, and the garage door, what was happening is my garage door would start to go down, and it was halfway down, it would go back up. So I've been having a problem with the sun hitting the sensors, and I thought maybe that was it because sometimes because of the sun, it can't read the sensor. The guy comes out and he goes, he looks at the sensors, and I tell him, because I don't want people to think I'm stupid and they can snowball me. I go, I think it's the sunlight hitting the sensors and it's interrupting the sensors reading each other. He looks at it and he touches the first one and he goes, oh, the sensor's really loose. And he goes, yeah, and they're pushed forward really far. He goes, that sunlight is a problem sometimes with sensors. So he takes 2 seconds and he pushes the sensors back and tightens them and the garage door works. $89 to find that out.
Oh my God. That's annoying.
Yeah. So he said, they were super nice. He says, look, I know you paid $89, but if you pay $90, what we'll do is we will loop the chain, we'll clean off the track, well, all this stuff, maintenance stuff. I'm like, fine, do it. I'm in for a few bucks anyway. So they ended up doing that. And I notice now when the garage door is up, the sun is not hitting the sensors and it's working.
Okay. Well, so I guess it was worth it.
Yeah, it was worth it because there were a lot of times I thought I was losing my mind. I always close the garage door and I'd go back out through the front door to leave or something. And I'd be like, why the hell is my garage door open? Why would I leave the garage door open? I'm like, what is wrong with me? There's so much wrong with me today. I don't know what I was doing when for 3 days. I don't know why, but my alarm wasn't going off. I'm like, what the fuck is happening? It says 7 o'clock a.m. The only reason I even woke up one day is Boo woke me up because it was like 8:30. And I thought, I'm just going to set another alarm to try to find out what's going on. And it
for some reason, I didn't even know you could do this. So I don't know how I did it. You could shut the sound off on an alarm. I'm like, why the fuck do you need that that feature? Why would you set an alarm and then somehow want to turn off the sound? I don't know. So I'm like, well, no wonder it wasn't working. So I fixed that, started working. I slept like crap last night. I got up. I am a creature of habit. I have to have a routine. Some people want change all the time. I don't, because I move like a robot. So I was trying to make my coffee, and I always put 3 bags of Splenda in my iced coffee. And so I'm thinking of something. I'm going through the routine of opening the bags all at once and dumping them into my cup. But instead of dumping them into my cup, I dump them into my oatmeal. And I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. Now my oatmeal is going to be way too sweet. So I was trying to take the oatmeal. I should have just went back to bed.
Aw.
Yeah. I still am dealing with vertigo. I rolled over last night and it was horrible. I wanted to throw up. Whoa. I called the doctor a couple weeks ago and said, look, this physical therapy shit isn't working. I need to see the specialist again. And he said, well, the problem with that is, why does it take so damn long? You know, everybody was saying, we don't want socialized medicine because you have to wait forever to see a doctor. You have to wait forever to see a doctor here.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, it's going to take forever. He literally said, it's going to take forever to get you in to see a specialist. I'm like, I don't care. Put me in the fucking queue because time's going by anyway. And right now, my life is misery with this vertigo that won't go away.
Yeah, that's frustrating. I don't know if it's because you have Medicare, so you have to use their doctors and use their referral system or what?
That has anything to do with it. I don't think that has anything to do with it, because I know even when I was living up north, when I needed to see an ear, nose, and throat specialist, it would take about 6 weeks to get in. But at least there was hope at the end of the tunnel. And they would fix me. Down here, nobody's able to get me in and nobody's able to fix me. And I really hate living my life like this. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, that sucks.
So I sit on the sofa and I watch Vanderpump Rules. Did you watch the latest Vanderpump Rules?
No, I'm actually kind of bored with Vanderpump Rules. I didn't watch the most recent episode, and I didn't finish the episode before that. I'm kind of bored with it.
Are you watching The Valley?
I'm watching The Valley, and then I also have Hulu, so I tried the new show she has, Vanderpump Villa, which I will say I find incredibly boring and way too similar to the show Below Deck.
Oh, no. Yeah, I don't watch that. I am watching Vanderpump Rules, but I got to tell you, they need to bring a psychologist in for that show. There are so many people on that show that really need to talk to a professional. And I am very concerned about Adriana. The level of hate and fury she has at Tom for betraying her. And believe me, I'm team Adriana, but I worry about her mental health. Being in this situation, there's something going on deeper there about being deceived or violated or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. She is livid. And I mean, yeah, if somebody did that to me after 9 years and betrayed me with what I thought was my good friend, I would hate them too. But I certainly would not try to appear in social gatherings with them. I would avoid that like the plague. And all I can think of is watching that show is that saying, which is really was enlightening for me, is carrying around hate is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. Mm-hmm. It's so destructive for your mental health and your physical well-being. I hope that she goes and talks to somebody to help her deal with it, because I really do like her and I want her to be happy.
Yeah. See, at this point, I'm even annoyed with her. This is how over the show I am, because granted, it's slightly different from how she got with Tom, that at the same time, mm-hmm. she was the other woman when she started dating Tom. Tom mm-hmm. was with Kristen still. And mm-hmm. so she can't really be pissed off because, you know, that other saying, you lose them the way you get them.
Oh, yeah.
It's very true. If you get them by cheating on them or with them, you're going to lose them because they're going to cheat on you. Right. And so it's very similar, granted, a little different. But I'm like, you don't need to live in the same house with him. If you hate his guts, you want to avoid him, you know, then she gets upset. Like in recent non-show related situations, she gets upset because her dog gets sick while she's out of town. Yeah. And she left the dog at the house. It's like, put the dog in some sort of doggy daycare while you're out of town. Like, why would he care for your dog? You hate his guts. You don't trust him. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. why would you trust him with your dog? At some point, you have to pull your head out of the sand and figure out what the fuck you're doing with your life and move on. And I am happy to hear that she recently purchased her own house.
Yeah.
In Los Angeles. So mm-hmm. hopefully she will move into it soon. And I'm even more excited to hear that Lala purchased a house, I believe, in the Valley. So maybe Lala will start appearing on the Valley more.
Oh, no, I'm not watching that show. I can't stand Jax. I hate him.
I like Jax.
Oh, there's no redeeming. What is his redeeming quality?
I mean, I don't have that many problems with him. I know, like, the things he does that bothers you, but, like, I don't. There's people on the show I dislike more. And I also really like Kristen's boyfriend, Luke.
I do, too. Why is Jack such a dick to him? I really like her, man. I don't know about her. I worry about her. Mm-hmm. Boy, yeah, I watched part of, I don't think I watched the whole thing, but I watched part of The Valley because I was in the middle of something and I wasn't interested in changing the channel. And did you see where they're at that dinner?
I mean, I've seen every episode, so yes.
Okay, yeah. I'm like, oh my God, it's just unbelievable the way these mm-hmm. people interact. I don't know what it is with these people in LA that they feel, you know, fear of missing out, needing to be seen, needing to be on a TV show. It looks like your life is misery and I wouldn't want it for all the tea in China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because one of the latest scandals was so-and-so said this about another person in the group. And one of the several accusations they said was, I think so-and-so is a Republican, which is such a California thing to say. Like,
I loved it.
I almost died. Like it's fucking hilarious. Like, it's like,
yeah. I'm like, that. And it's true what they said. If you're saying somebody is a Republican in LA, you're threatening them with being shunned by the entire community. It was totally a California thing to say.
Yes, I almost died when that was one of the accusations. And it's like, this is so California and so LA that if you are, gasp, a Republican, you have to keep it on the down low. None of your friends find out and pretend you're a Democrat. Otherwise, you will be ostracized. It was fucking hilarious.
Yeah. So do you think that guy really told Kristen that? And he's lying so that he doesn't get thrown out of the group?
I don't know what that guy said. I don't care what that guy says. The only thing I care about that guy is, why the fuck does his hair look like that?
I don't know. I didn't even notice his hair.
His hair is so distracting. It's like pushed forward, covering too much of his forehead, but then the color is really dark. And I'm like, I don't want to really make so many assumptions or sound like a horrible fucking person, but I feel like, given that you're a gay guy, maybe you would have better style for your hair.
Well, yes. That's the one thing, especially in LA. You think the dress, the clothing would be impeccable, the hairstyle would be, everything would be impeccable, in my opinion. But, you know, I'm sitting here in sweatpants and an old shirt and a sweater that's got pulls all over it. So I'm not the queen of fashion. But when
I'm not either.
Yeah, when you live in LA, you and what they do and their whole scene is being seen and wearing super expensive clothing. So I don't know. But yeah, I love Kristen's man and I love Brock. Oh my God, I am so in lust with him. And I don't know what Sheena's doing. She needs to get her shit together because she's going to lose that man. And for me, that would be a crime.
I love Brock also. I think I'd really like that Luke is not a California LA man. He's from Colorado.
Right.
Now I listened to Popping Off with Teddy Mellencamp. And why am I drawing a blank right now? Oh my God, this is actually going to piss me off because I really like this show. Emily Simpson from two different current and former Real Housewives. So they have a show called Popping Off. They talk about Vanderpump Rules and The Valley, and they call him Luke Colorado because that's essentially what Jax always calls him, right? Luke from Colorado.
Oh, yeah. But
he just gives me such like manly man vibes, and he's like defending her honor. When Kristen told him about the incident she had with Jesse, he was like fucking livid. And then there's a dinner party and they're going off and he's like screaming at Jesse about like, you need to calm down and like, don't speak to her like that. And if we need to settle this, we'll settle it. And I'm like, holy shit, that is so hot.
It's totally hot. Maybe I need to look for a man in Colorado because I agree with you. He is not a California guy. I want a man that's going to throw down for me if need be. And he is all over that.
Yeah, he gives me very strong book boyfriend vibes, who hurt you kind of thing. Yeah. God, but he's, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's a real person. So, yeah. So if for no other reason, maybe watch the show for him.
Yeah. And I like the advice he gives her about, you know, maybe think about things told in confidence. Maybe you should keep them confident. He's very calm. To me, he is somebody that she needs. Mm-hmm. And for that reason alone, that I like him so much, that's why I dislike Jax. It's like he's going out of his way to sabotage their relationship. And I'm like, what, do you still have feelings for her? What is this? You go live your fucking life. Your life is circling the drain, buddy. Your relationship is circling the drain, and leave the other people alone.
See, I think I like that about Jax because he brings, you need somebody in the show to do that. And so I think you need him in the show. In real life, I wouldn't be able to handle a Jax. In real life, I would want a Luke Colorado to defend my honor, fucking have 40 acres or whatever he has in Colorado, do all the things. That's what I would want in real life. For show, for shit stirring purposes, I like Jax there.
Well, I can't handle him in the show. I would never be able to handle a man like that in real life. It's like, fuck off and die, buddy. Just get away. You're so fake and phony and full of shit and nothing, no redeeming quality that I want in a man. And if Kristen was smart, she would take Luke and she would move to Colorado, live on his 40 acres, get the fuck out of LA. I swear, when I used to go to LA, I'd step off the plane and I would seriously feel the vacuum of something trying to suck my soul out of my body. It is a bottomless pit of narcissism. And she needs to get out of there and have babies with him. She wants babies. He wants babies with her. Get away from LA and go live a good life.
Seriously.
That's my advice. Yeah. And take me with you because maybe Luke has a brother or an older father or somebody that is whoever Colorado also for me.
Yeah, I like it. Well,
yeah. Yeah, so that's right, it. Well, that's all I'm doing.
Okay, well, I'm starting to have a coughing fit, so we should probably go now.
Okay. All right.
So
you have a good day and feel better, and I hope your family feels better.
All right, thank you. Me too. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Bonded Books Podcast. You can rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Our email is bondedbookspodcast@gmail.com. And check the show notes for a link to all of our social media.